Today, I am speaking with world-renowned scholar, relationship expert, and spiritual teacher, Rabbi Manus Friedman. I wanted to have this conversation in person, so I flew up to New York to spend time with Rabbi. And at one point in the conversation, it came up that I grew up in Santa Cruz, California, and he looked surprised. And I said, oh, you've heard of it. Most people only know about Santa Cruz because of the UCSC slugs. If anybody's seen Pulp Fiction, you'll remember John Travolta's shirt with the banana slugs. That's usually what people remember about Santa Cruz, or maybe the Lost Boys. And so he looked at me and he said, my son is a rabbi at the Chabad in Santa Cruz, and my mom goes to that same Chabad. And so we realized that my mom actually treats, she's a homeopath and a naturopath, she treats his entire family, his son and his grandchildren. And it was a really beautiful moment. And the whole conversation was beautiful and powerful because we explored everything, and you'll hear it here in the episode, the foundational pillars of marriage and how the definition of these pillars has really deviated from perhaps what it once was that really worked. Self-dignity, generational patterns, and family blueprints that actually inform the way that we relate. He shared a lot of timeless wisdom on the dance that men and women do in relationship and why the popular notion of 50-50 relationships often leave both partners feeling depleted, disconnected, resentful. And we look at the true purpose of marriage, which is far greater than so much of the personal fulfillment we aim to have. I'd say this episode is more than just a discussion. It's really a call to action to return to a wholeness and a clarity and a connection about how we relate to ourselves and to our partners and to our children. So I'm super excited to have you here. Thank you so much for being part of the Born to Know family. And I look forward to hearing your thoughts on this episode. Thank you for joining me today. It's an honor to have you.
Well, I hope it'll also be a pleasure.
One can hope. I found your work 5 years ago. It was really moving for me because I was going through a big transition in my life, and it gave me a lot of clarity about what I wanted moving forward in relationship with God, in relationship with myself, in relationship with my child and those around me. I began sharing it, and I saw how it influenced and impacted the women in my life. And so just want to say thank you first for creating what you do. So thank you. Thank you for being here.
You're very welcome. I'm not sure exactly what it is that you found or...
Yeah, so I found it was a video that you had mentioned the pillars of marriage and sanctity, respect. And when we got to this part of respect and dignity, I was like, oh, where have I faltered in having dignity, my own dignity, when it comes to relationship? And I went down, let's call it the rabbit hole, so to speak, of understanding my own patterns in how I relate. And of course, it took me down the path of exploring how I grew up and the relationship that my parents had and the blueprint that they created for me. So that was might have been where it started. And there was more to go from there.
Yeah, we're so undereducated in the most vital areas of life. And it's a big frustration, I think. People feel that they spend so many years in school being educated, and then they get into life, and nothing they learned is useful in actual life. It's devastating. I don't think it used to be this way.
What
first you learned about life, and then if you were bored, you went into higher education. But to not be educated in life, that's cruel. And if you work in this field, you see the suffering. You see the horrors of it.
Yeah.
the most successful people. There's no real joy because we don't know what we're doing. In fact, we don't even know why we're here. Never mind what we're doing. Why am I here in the first place? And if I can't answer that, I'm in trouble.
Yeah.
And if I don't worry about it, my kids will ask, and then then I'll be in trouble because I don't know what to tell them. There are actually people who hesitate getting married because the children are going to ask this question and they won't know what to answer. I mean, that's how big the concern is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, let's explore that.
Yeah, so how is a child's blueprint formed when it comes to understanding family and relationship?
Well, first he's born.
Yeah.
And you're never born a clean slate. You're born with a definite pattern, with a definite character. I mean, every mother knows this. If she has more than one child, she knows. They're not the same. They're born with personalities. They're born with agendas. They're children born angry. Mm. Children born grieving. Mm. Nobody is born blank. And that's why every child needs different kinds of attention and different kinds of... So I think the first thing is, you're male or female. If that's not clear, if that's not comfortable, if that's not established, there's problems. So what is male and what is female? If you look in the Torah, which tells us everything we need to know, the woman longs for her husband, right? That was supposed to be the curse to Eve after she ate from the tree. But it wasn't a curse. It was an analysis. You yearn for a husband. This makes every man who has any male instincts go crazy. Because to be yearned for, that's irresistible. So the dance of life, the relationship between male and female, is the male response to the woman's hunger. And that's why the woman is the mother of all life, because it all begins with her. Hungering literally means nurturing. And that's so underappreciated. The power of a nurturer, that's it. Without it, life is finished. A nurturer means, I don't have to do anything, but if you come close, you will thrive. Like the uterus. What does it do? Nobody knows. It doesn't seem to do anything, but wow, what it produces. That's called nurturing. A nurturing home is not where certain things happen. Nothing has to happen. You walk in and you blossom because it's a nurturing place. Nurturing seems to be passive because it doesn't need to do anything to have a powerful effect. Whereas the male is the provider. He's got to do something. If he doesn't do anything, he's useless. That's why men are always looking to fix something, to provide something. What's missing? What can I bring? What can I get? What can I? So here's the difference. The male instinct is to repair. The female instinct is to nurture what is already good. Hmm. Now, of course, we cross lines very often. Sometimes a woman has to do some repairing. And sometimes a man has to do some nurturing, usually when he becomes a Zaidi. A grandfather, if he's a good grandfather, is a male nurturer. Yeah. But that usually takes years.
Yeah.
Years of being male before he can become a nurturer. Yeah. So the female sees what is good and increases it. A man sees what's missing and wants to provide. So the woman's desire, the woman's hunger, is irresistible to a man because there's something to provide. If he's not needed, he's finished. So the worst thing a wife can say to her husband is, I'll do it myself. That's it. He's emasculated.
Yeah.
Oh, you don't need me? Oh, I love you. Not the same. Mm. We would much rather be needed than loved, because love can't make up for not being needed. And that's true of everybody, by the way. We're so drunk on this love thing. It's horrible.
Yeah, you said, what did you say? We have a really serious problem called love.
Yes. It was turned into an idol.
Yeah, Hollywood did that. Right?
Yes. Hollywood uses love to manipulate us. Yeah. And we're brainwashed. Love is the solution to all problems. The absence of love is what causes all problems. And if you love each other, it's perfect. You need nothing else. All we really need is love. That's so not true. Love and marriage go together like a horse and carriage. So not true.
Thank you, Al Bundy.
Horses and carriages get along much better.
Yeah, because they have a common shared goal.
They're not opposites.
Right.
Yeah, so how do you raise a little boy, make him feel needed?
Yeah.
Give him a little responsibilities?
Yeah.
Well, when we say a man is a giver and a woman is the nurturer, it's not an assigned job. It's not a role. A man's satisfaction in life is when he knows that he gave successfully. Otherwise, he can be the richest guy in the world. He's miserable. A woman's main satisfaction, not the only, but the main satisfaction, is that she nurtures. If she can't nurture, no matter how successful she is in every other area, there's a hole in the heart. So it's not a role. It's not dictated by society. It is our truest nature.
Yeah.
And you can't fool Mother Nature.
No, you can't. I say that all the time regarding birth and the process that women go through and what you say about women having a hole in their heart when they're not able to nurture. It's an epidemic, actually. There are so many women who I've worked with even over the last decade or so that feel that grief because they're working full time and they have two children at home who are being taken care of by someone else for 8 hours a day because she's has an arrangement with her husband that they're 50-50 or, you know, all of these, what I say, like the after effects of feminism, have really impacted the woman's own joy and contentment that you're talking about and the man's, because I don't really truly believe that the man is happy and content either with this dynamic, but somehow they're following this rubric for success and everyone's empty.
And success is neither male nor female.
Right.
So it leaves you without an identity. Successful is not an identity. In fact, it's an avoidance. Men run to work because they're afraid to be men. Not because it makes them feel like a man. So being the head of a company doesn't make you masculine, doesn't make you feminine. Money doesn't have a gender. So even when women go to work, There's a feminine way, a nurturing way of doing it. But you're stepping into a role that has been dominated by men who already set a tone or a pattern. And so you step into that pattern and it's miserable. And it doesn't improve the business atmosphere, the workplace. You would think it would become a little more humane because women's influence.
I don't know that women are really influencing the space in their true femininity anyway. They're just playing the role of the man. So it's a mess. And I can't tell you how many women I know in their 30s, 40s, 50s who've had successful careers and are all exhausted and depleted, but they don't know how to rest into their femininity, into their receptivity, because it's just been this race for so long. And the life they've built is set up for them to be in this pursuer role, penetrative role of, you know, getting, acquiring. And so they say, I can't find a successful relationship because I don't know how to receive.
But then to make it matters worse, you say, oh, she's become masculine. No, she hasn't.
No.
That's not masculine.
It's a disorganized feminine, let's call it.
And does that contribute to gender dysphoria? I don't know what I am anymore. Yeah. So maybe the problem is I'm the wrong gender. Maybe that's the problem.
And they raise kids with that mentality.
And then it becomes dangerous.
Right.
So this information is literally life-saving. So here's the thing with little boys. For some strange reason, boys are born to women. Now, isn't that weird? I mean, that can mess up your whole life. Men should give birth to boys, and women should give birth to girls, and then we'd all be sane. But little boys are born to women. You know, we actually make a blessing every morning. Men make a blessing. Thank you for not making me a woman. Because I started off as a woman. I was my mother. Now, women don't have to make that blessing. You were your mother, and you're going to be a mother, and everything's cool.
Yeah, we're good.
But for a boy, it's a tricky, you got to navigate this. A little boy innocently wants to become a mommy. He wants to wear mommy's clothing and put on lipstick or whatever. Yeah, that's okay. Up to a point. At some point, he has to disconnect from his mother and relate to his father. But then if that lasts too long, he becomes daddy's little boy. He'll never be a man. So he's got to disconnect from his mother to be a boy. Then he's got to disconnect from his father to become a man.
Mm.
You miss the turn, you're lost. So the girl's life is much more sane. You're a little girl and you want to be a mommy. Good. What's the problem?
Right. I want to ask you about initiations for boys, because I feel like one of the reasons, or my perception is one of the reasons that the nuclear family is dismantling, a lot of reasons, but one of the reasons is that men fail to step into a maturity and an initiation because we don't have communities that provide that, generally speaking, in the modern world.
In every tradition, I think, there was some kind of a process by which a boy becomes a man. And that's not just a sentiment. It's true. A boy becoming a man is a real transformation. It's a metamorphosis. Men today, in their 40s, are still boys. So in every society, in every culture, there was some kind of a process where you had to go out into the wilderness by yourself, and if you came back alive, you were a man. Mm-hmm. If you died, well, too bad. Oh. Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
In Jewish tradition, you went off to yeshiva.
Hmm.
Even if your father was the best teacher in the world, you got to go away from home and find yourself a teacher or a mentor.
Yeah.
A mentor is not just somebody who educates you. It's somebody who invites you into the world of men. And if you're invited, you become a man. If you just hang out with the boys, you remain a boy. So back in the 60s, when anyone over 30 became irrelevant, there was no way for a boy to become a man. So we never grew up.
Hmm.
In order to be a man, you have to be approved by someone who had become a man. And that's usually after 60.
Yeah.
But when you're irrelevant at 30. So what happened is men tried to find approval from women. Doesn't work. A woman cannot make you a man. Or they tried to find approval from each other. So they joined gangs, groups, clubs, and told each other how great they were. It doesn't work. If you want to go a little deeper, men are born paranoid. Not paranoid. Worried. Legitimately. Everything we need to know is in the Torah. So the Torah says, Adam, the first man, was created from the dust. From sand. Woman was created from a human being who was both male and female, and the female became independent of the male. So if you look at origins, what is the origin of man? Dust. From dust you are, and to dust you will return. What is the origin of a woman? The man. That gives us our weak spot. If I don't become a man, I'm dust. If you don't become a woman, you surrender to a man. Everything goes back to its source if it doesn't develop its independence. So the fear of being dust, of being nothing, is a very masculine problem. Every man is afraid that he is basically nothing. Women don't have that in their psyche. You're never nothing. You're one or you're 10, but there's no zero. And there's a huge difference. Nobody wants to be a one when you can be a 10. But to be a zero, that's devastation. That's annihilation. So men have a fear of being nothing, of amounting to nothing. And the most powerful and the most famous and the most influential men in history were the most paranoid. Are you saying I'm nothing? And no matter what you do, you can't prove that you're something. That ghost that haunts you just never goes away. So women thinking you're great, you need that reassurance constantly, because if you let go for a second, you fall back into, oh, I'm nothing. And that's why men are particularly sensitive. Men's egos are much weaker than women's. We're much more fragile. Any criticism is devastating. A woman says to a man, oh, I thought you were taller. He hates her. What did I say?
It's
because
true.
Because it awakens the demon.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not this tall. You mean I'm not as smart? You mean I'm not as important? You mean I'm nothing, right? No, but that's how men take it. Any criticism reduces us back to dust, which is annihilation. We can't handle that. Any compliment works. Anything. The silliest, most inane. Like, you changed the light bulb?
Yeah.
I know it's silly.
It's a proven formula.
But at least I'm not nothing. Whereas if you give a woman a ridiculous compliment, it doesn't work.
She knows it's baloney.
Because she doesn't need the compliment. Women don't need compliments. Women need appreciation. A man needs to know he's something, so every compliment. A woman knows she's something. She doesn't understand why nobody appreciates it. So if you don't say thank you, it's like, hey, did you just eat the breakfast I made you and you don't remember who did it? So if a woman is taken for granted, that is devastation.
Yeah.
But it's moral outrage. It's not annihilation.
Yeah.
Whereas if a man is treated like nothing, he becomes nothing. He surrenders to it. And he becomes emasculated. So easy to emasculate a man.
I've worked with a lot of couples over the years in their conception and pregnancy journey, so I become privy to certain dynamics. And a dynamic I would often run into was the woman becoming what I call, what many people might call, the dark mommy. Oh, fix this. Oh, your collar's like this. Oh, do this. Oh, did you lock that? Oh, did you remember to do that? Have you eaten? Right. So it crosses this nurturer and into what I would say is a very controlling female presence. And the man, if he's maybe predisposed to wanting to be taken care of by a mommy, maybe the dynamic ends up working out. I wouldn't say it's healthy, but they figure something out. But this is where a lot of resistance starts to come into play, because he's never being given the opportunity to do it his way and to prove that he's done something or accomplished something, because she's always controlling. And so one of the suggestions I would give, and I'm by no means a relationship therapist, but I end up in this kind of third-party role in the process, I say, how about you just let him drive the route he wants to take next time you come to my office? Oh, but he always takes the long way. So what? You know, you're not driving. Let him drive.
That's a very good suggestion. And in the long run, if you allow him to do things his way that is not right, you'll eventually be able to suggest the right way. But if you don't let him do it the wrong way, he just stops doing. And then there's nothing. And that's why being the backseat driver, like, slow down, use your sick. He's been driving for 30 years.
Yeah.
And he usually comes home. So somehow it works. Why do you? Yeah. And just saying slow down, he's emasculated. And then you wonder, why is he not romantic? Why is he? You've emasculated him.
And so how do young girls come into this role of controlling? I mean, there's a lot of psychological theories as to why women grow up feeling like they need to control, right? I would say some of it has to do with this hyper-independence that's instilled in all young women, you know, because of this, you know, offshoot of feminism, right? What we're recovering from feminism, you know, go out, be independent, make sure you can take care of yourself. You can do it the right way. You don't need a man, right? It's like that's been the messaging for so long. However, deep down inside, when women really tap in, they do want to be in relationship. They do want to be taken care of. They do want to just nurture. And to do that, they want to feel safe, right? They want to feel provided for so that they can multiply the man's wealth and they can multiply whatever good thing is there. But they're so scared of letting go of that control. How can a woman do that now, right? She's waking up, she's realizing, okay, I'm in my 30s, I'm in my 40s, I can't have a successful relationship because, you know, he always leaves or he says I'm controlling or we lost the spark or, you know, whatever it is, right? It's my divorce, you know, I don't know. So how do women unlearn this and where does it come from, do you say?
And why do they marry? If you want to be independent, you are already independent. What's the marriage for? Want to have babies? You don't have to be married. Want to have a sex partner? You don't have to be shocked to the system, but it's true.
Yeah.
You can have everything you want without marriage. Why are you marrying? Now, those who do want marriage is because they want a man. They want someone to lean on. They want somebody stable. They want somebody strong. They want somebody taller than them so they can look up to. But the first time he fails to do what she thinks he needs to do, she steps in and does it for him, and that's the beginning of the end. She becomes the doer and then complains why he doesn't do anything. I was talking to this couple, and she's saying, he never does anything. Since we got married, he hasn't done anything. He does nothing. And the guy is sitting there like shocked. He says, what are you talking about? Name one thing you asked for that I didn't give you. No, you never do anything. Anyway, somewhere along the line, she says, you know, I've had it. We've been through so many counseling, but let's just get divorced. He says, if you want a divorce, I'll give you a divorce. She turns to me and says, you see, when she said he never does anything, she meant he never does anything without my asking.
Mm.
He never initiates. Everything I've asked for, he's done. Makes me sick. She wants him to initiate. She wants to step into his life and nurture it, and he won't let her.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a life for her to step into. So she's frustrated. And he says, I'm the best husband in the world. I give you everything you want. When I ask. So who's leading the show here? You can't fool Mother Nature. You know, in primitive terms, which, you know, is still true to some degree because we're all primitive, the deal between mother and husband and wife is the wife becomes a mother. She has to nurture the child or the children. To nurture the children, she has to be completely present. Free of distraction. Marriage was the arrangement that said, if I take care of all the needs and all the technicalities and leave you free to nurture, will you raise my children? That's it. That's marriage. Marriage means since you're going to be nurturing the children, I will free you of every responsibility and of every concern. That's a family. And it worked for 5,000 years, give or take. Then all of a sudden, this 50-50 stuff came about. It is so unnatural. What does it mean, 50? I'll be 50% male and 50% female, and you'll be... You can't do that.
No, because what ends up happening is...
You're neither male nor female.
You're neither male nor female.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of invisible labor that goes into being a woman. It's in our nature. And that's, so the woman ends up doing 100. She feels she does.
She does, but she does it as a nurturer, not as a provider.
Well, and on top of it, she's expected to go to work. So now she's exhausted and burnt out.
Or she wants to go to work because he's never home anyway. Why should she be a single mother? Raising a child by herself. She said, yeah, I'll go to work too. So men have to change. The career has got to stop being a competition to the family. It's terrible. Terrible. The other thing that's terrible is the self. The bad psychology. Nurture yourself, love yourself, validate yourself, take care of yourself. You're number one. That is so unnatural. Love yourself? That's like talking to yourself and communicating very well. That's crazy. Don't talk to yourself because you're a good communicator. Don't love yourself because you're capable of love.
Where does this fall? I want to ask you while you're saying this, because you'd mentioned one of your lectures about dignity, this dignity that you have for yourself where you say, I'm not going to take that, right? Maybe it's a type of, you know, neglect, or the husband's not generous with his words or his affection and is actually unkind, maybe verbally abusive, right? So there's a point where the woman has to love herself enough to say, this isn't right. This isn't just, this doesn't feel good. There's no mutual respect here, right? So is that what that means, to love oneself enough to know?
The reason it doesn't feel good is because you love yourself, but you don't have the courage to do anything about it. So you wallow in your self-love, wondering why he doesn't love you. The self-love is a disease. It's narcissism. We know this now. All self-love is narcissism. And narcissism is not healthy. Besides not being nice.
Yeah.
It's self-destructive. You die from it. I mean, the whole myth of narcissism. He died because he couldn't tear himself away from his own image. I think the first message that parents need to give to their children, which maybe they didn't get themselves, it's not about you. Does that sound cruel? A child needs to learn that it's not about you because the child is absolutely convinced that it's all about it. That's a child. The whole world is me. Well, you got to wean them off of that.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's not about you. So the reason you're capable of love is so that you can love others, not to love yourself.
Yeah. Do you think that children get into this, you know, narcissistic way of being because there is such little community now where they're having to take on responsibility and see that things are, you know, it's giving and taking, that there's a role, right? Because we have these, you know, little homes that we live in, these pods, I call them. They're not interacting with other people very much. Community, even family, sometimes they're not interacting. So they really do get put in this situation where it is all about them.
Whereas in third world countries, where you do have to work and help out,
You
don't have this kind of narcissism.
Right.
But it's worse in the West. Not only is there no need to serve and think about others, you're actually told not to. Oh, think only about yourself. Do what's best for you. Remember this sign, every day do something you enjoy. That's all we ever do. What kind of advice is that? Every day, do something you enjoy. How about do something someone else enjoys for a change?
Yeah.
We're all born narcissistic. Every child is a narcissist. The art of raising children is to wean them away from narcissism. But our culture actually encourages it. A person is worth $200 billion. Can he possibly think that that's for him? The money he has is for him. No, it can't be, right? It does not compute. So they're very willing to give away a lot of money.
Yeah.
Because it's not for me. I'll never need this. It's a good example for everything else in life. I'm capable of so much love, so I love myself. That's twisted. You're capable of love so that you can love others. You're capable of respect so that you can respect others. You're capable of communication so that you can talk to others. Talking to yourself is like keeping $200 billion under your mattress. For me. No, it's not for you.
Well, this is interesting because I know a lot of couples where it's a very transactional relationship. And I wonder if it stems from this, right? Where it's like, you know, the man says, well, if you do this, then I can provide this. If you give me this, then I'll be willing to do that. And, you know, it becomes this kind of tit for tat, right? And you alluded to this in one of your lectures, and it was like, you know, men are not interested in becoming a husband or a father. They want to stay a man and even a woman. You know, she wants to stay a woman. She doesn't want to be a wife. So it goes back to that question, why are you getting married? And, you know, I was working with a couple recently, and this is kind of in the zeitgeist right now, actually, with people I know that, you know, they don't want to, you know, they said, maybe I don't want to have kids because life is expensive. So we're going to do this, you know, 50-50, let's say. But then as the woman, or maybe the man, you know, develops in the relationship, they become closer, they start to learn about themselves. One of them says, I want to have a child. What are we doing here? What is the purpose of this? What are we building? You know, and the other person says, well, I don't know. I just want to have the freedom. I don't want that. You know, I don't want to be weighed down by that. And it seems, there just seems to be so much confusion about the purpose of marriage and the purpose of what it is to be a man and a wife to each other. So what is the purpose?
The purpose of marriage?
Yeah.
Or the purpose of life? It's really, really sad and I think dangerous. I can't be burdened. I can't be restricted. I have to be free to live. What's life? I don't know. So you run away from everything in order to be able to live, but you have no idea what living is. Live for what? The healthiest attitude, and this is, I think, futuristic, which means it's going to happen, and it hasn't happened yet, but it is going to happen. The healthiest attitude is, I don't need to live. I don't need to live. If I wasn't born, would I complain? No, never. I don't need to be born. I don't need to live. This attitude, like, you got to live. You got to survive. Why? In Yiddish, a big gesund, right? You just have to be healthy. Why? Because you might die. Yeah, so. And it's not suicidal. It's a very rational, important question. Yeah. Why do I need to live? When children say, I didn't ask to be born, doesn't mean they're depressed. It means they're smart. I didn't ask to be born. How did I end up with all these obligations? I got to go to school. I got to do this. I got to do that. Hey, wait a minute. If I wasn't born, I wouldn't have to do all these things. And I didn't ask to be born. So don't tell me I have to. I don't have to anything. Not that I mind. If life is good, I don't mind living. But don't tell me I have to. I don't need this. It's scary. But it's true. And the reason it's scary is because we don't know our Creator. If I didn't ask to be born, then why was I? If I don't need to be here, who needs me? I am here. Obviously, somebody, and not just my mother and father, because they didn't ask to be born either. So why are we here? So it boils down to this very simple equation. Choice in life means this. You can be needy or you can be needed. That's it. That's the ultimate choice in life. If you're needy, well, good luck. You'll never be happy. If you're needed, nothing can stop you. Who needs you? Your Creator, obviously. Because He created you and your mother. So when a child says, I didn't ask to be born, that is such a good opportunity to bring home the ultimate message. It's not about you. It's not your need that brings you into existence. And it really doesn't make sense once you think about it. Life is born into needs and spend the rest of your life satisfying those needs. What a ridiculous proposition. Do me a favor. Cancel the needs. I don't need to be needy. It's a curse. And it's not natural. That's why it causes depression. So a person feels like, too many needs, too many needs. So he goes for therapy. Finds out that he has needs he never even heard of.
It's funny how that works.
Repressed needs, suppressed needs, subconscious needs. Your mother never wanted you. Oh, I don't need more needs. So you go to religion. Can I get a little relief here? You know, what do you find out when you go to religion? That your needs don't end when you die. There's no escape. It's not good. We actually do this, going back to raising children. When you say to a child, it's bedtime, 8 o'clock, time to go to sleep. Kid says, I don't want to. What do the parents say? I know you don't want to, but it's bedtime. What are you saying? What is the message? The key word is but. You don't want to, but what? I don't want to. That's the end of the conversation. No, there's a but. You don't want to, but it's not about you. It's bedtime. You go to bed. It's weaning the child away from it, from him or herself. the opposite of permissive, indulging, right? I know you don't want to, but there are certain rules. It doesn't go by what you want or don't want. You don't say that. You don't want to crush
right.
the child's confidence, but it's not about you.
Yeah.
But where's the but? Well, maybe you want to go to sleep later. Maybe you want to say, no, don't do that. Don't keep making it about the child. Let the child know that there are certain things you do because it is right, not because you think so. Hopefully, you'll grow up to be a human being.
Well, it sounds like this is where they start learning about choice and discernment. And this is actually part of the bigger initiation away from the family, eventually. It's being able to say, I might not want this right now, but this is what has to be done, right? That's what I like to do with my daughter, give her two choices, you know, and then she starts to learn to decide between those two choices. There is no option to not go to bed, but there's two choices and, you know, or there's not an option with the food, right? The option is you eat it or you go to bed hungry. So one time she said, I'm not going to eat this. I said, okay. And she woke up the next morning and said, I was hungry all night. I said, you going to eat tonight? She said, yeah. So she was able to come to the conclusion on her own without what I call the food fight or the struggle or the, it doesn't have to be that way. And I think that's really where the child starts to say, what's out here? The but.
Yeah. You know? Yes.
So
I don't like this, but I'm going to do it because, so the bottom line is we don't need to be here. We're here because a creator needs us to be here. So the only question that we really need to answer is, who's the creator and what does he need? It does two things. If I'm not needy, I am healthy. And if I'm needed, I'm inspired.
Hmm.
Not needy and inspired, unstoppable.
It's beautiful. Rabbi, thank you so much.
Now it is a pleasure.
Thank you.